This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
MTSU is the first university in Tennessee to be recognized as an age-friendly school by a global network. This means that MTSU supports older adults through programs that help keep them learning, find new careers, and stay involved in the community. MTSU met four important goals to earn this title, showing it cares about helping people of all ages thrive. Today, our guest in studio from MTSU, Dr. Deborah Lee, holder of the NHC Chair of Excellence in Nursing at MTSU and director of the Positive Aging Consortium. Also with us, Dr. Brandon Grubbs, associate professor of exercise physiology and co-founder of the Positive Aging Consortium. How are both of y'all doing this morning?
We are great.
Fantastic.
We are so glad to be here.
Well, good. So I guess tell us first a little bit about this project.
Well, we are thrilled to let your listeners know that in December, MTSU became the first university and only currently university in all of Tennessee to receive the age-friendly university designation. We are one of over 110 universities across the world. It is a global network, and it covers five continents. And with Tennessee coming on board in December, we now have 36 of our 50 states that are now age-friendly university designated. So we are thrilled about that, and we can certainly talk about what that means.
Yeah, so how do you go about being picked for that?
Well, there's an application process, and so there are 10 principles of an age-friendly university. So that means what are we doing at the university to promote positive opportunities for older adults, especially around education? So it's what are policies and practices that are in place that support educational opportunities for older adults? And so the application asks you to apply for at least two of those in which you are doing activities. We submitted an application with four. Actually, we had six developed, and we chose to just go with four. So there are four areas that we are very strong in at MTSU that makes us friendly to older adults who wanting to pursue educational opportunities.
And then just out of curiosity, what exactly is an older adult? What age does that start at to be considered that?
I always hate answering that because people get depressed when they hear it. It varies a little bit. The network is not real specific about it, but we kind of have looked, when we looked at data at our university, we really looked at people 50 and over. As older adults. And that's really when you start getting into a little bit older middle-aged individuals. We do have programs at the university that are specifically targeted for people actually 60 and over in terms of taking classes at a reduced rate from typical tuition costs, or 60 and over who can audit a class for free at the university. So those are two examples at MTSU, really based on your age, that are available to you that are not available to people younger than that age.
And what are some of those older adults doing at MTSU? What types of programs are they involved with?
Well, so we have some great opportunities in our educational bandwidth. So we have a prior learning assessment that anybody coming in can get. Older adults get opportunities to pursue a bachelor's degree, and they get credit for their work experience. So some of those are programs in public safety, applied leadership, and professional studies. We also have a Master of Arts in Liberal Arts for individuals who maybe already have a bachelor's degree and want to pursue a master's degree. And that also is an opportunity for interdisciplinary, cross-discipline educational opportunities with lots of flexibility. And part of that flexibility is online courses. So especially if you're a working older adult, you don't have time to come to the university during the day. You can take online classes that you can do on your own time. And we also have evening classes in a lot of those programs. So those are just a couple of the examples that we have at MTSU.
Now, when you look at the different ages of those who live in Tennessee, what is the fastest growing demographic?
Well, it is people 60 and older. So shockingly to most people, by 2030, which is not that far away, we will have in the United States and Tennessee too, we're going to have more people who are 60 and over than we will people that are 18 and under for the first time in the history of this country.
Now, where do other states rank when you look at their ranking as far as older adults or those who are 60 plus?
Well, some states, if you look at some of the bigger state-wise, it's pretty similar, actually. But if you look at younger populations, the density of those people tend to be in bigger cities. So like New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, there you're going to see more younger folks living. But, you know, all the states are pretty much rural. So when you get to large rural geographic areas, that tends to be where older adults kind of want to live. It's quieter. You have a nicer pace of life. I know for me, I'm looking more forward to that in my life. So it's really dispersed pretty widely throughout the United States. But we do have a little bit older population here in Tennessee. So one of the things we're excited about is we want to contribute as part of the age-friendly ecosystem, which includes healthcare systems, public health, home and community-based services, and universities are also part of an age-friendly ecosystem.
Now, with MTSU being user-friendly for those who are 60-plus years of mm-hmm. age, do you have other universities coming to you asking questions? You know, hey, what can we do, or how did you go about doing this?
Yeah, so Dr. Grubbs, you want to talk about what we're doing in July, the presentation we're doing?
Sure. We're headed to Fall Creek Falls to participate in a Department of Health gathering. It's a symposium on collaborating with other academic institutions. And so as the only university right now in Tennessee with the AFU designation, we will be sharing that process with other universities in the state. And so we'll be able to connect with them and tell them what MTSU is doing. We can share with them the process that we went through for information and data gathering and kind of where the next 5 years looks for us and where we plan to devote our time and energy. And I'm hoping that they're I'm also listed as someone that can act as a mentor for other universities interested in pursuing that designation. So hopefully after this meeting, we'll have made some good connections and we can guide other universities in Tennessee to follow our lead.
Now, with this demographic, it would look or it would make sense, I guess, for a university like MTSU to also do a little research with this demographic. I mean, if this is such a growing demographic here in Tennessee, so what does that look like in that form? Are you going to do research surrounding this age group?
Oh, 100%. And my expertise is in geroscience, which is very translational, taking things that we learn in the lab, aging, biology, science, and translating that into something therapeutic, something very applied that the public can benefit from. And so, as Debbie mentioned, we had listed 6 areas for the application, but we decided to go with 4. And one of the 2 that we then identified as where we would devote a lot of our time and energy is to increasing aging research productivity at the university. And so that really that starts with really discovering all the faculty at MTSU that are serving as an aging expert and are research active, and getting them all together in a room and kind of I'm envisioning doing a little bit of a speed dating, getting people to connect with each other, developing some innovative groups and some novel projects that could be funded through the state or some federal funding, and some things that I'm currently doing in the lab at MTSU in collaboration with my colleague, Dr. John Coons, have to do with using aquatic therapy, which is using underwater treadmills that are temperature controlled to serve as a intervention for knee osteoarthritis. So people that are not quite to the point of needing an invasive surgery, like a knee replacement, but also not at the beginning stages of the disease development. So we're also interested in using that therapy for treating overall physical frailty. So those are just some of the areas that we're interested in, but we hope to collaborate with nearby universities like Vanderbilt to support this endeavor.
Now, those who are 60 plus, do they have a larger disposable income to actually spend on things and to cover expenses of things like treadmilling, you know, underwater?
Well, I think that that can be highly variable. And I think that depends on the location of the people that we're talking about. One of the things we would like to do is to create a low income therapy program that's supported by the Aquatic Research Laboratory so that we can support those in need. Otherwise, therapy outside of health insurance is actually quite expensive. And so people are then reliant on cash pay systems to support any sort of personal training or outside the clinic rehabilitation. So it really is variable, but older adults are an underserved population. And so this is just one way that we hope to support that group.
And those older adults, are they returning to MTSU so that they can go back to the career field and maybe get a promotion? Are they already in business? Are they already working for somebody?
That is also very variable. So for example, the MALA program, the Masters of Arts and Liberal Arts, has an average age of 55, but a student age range of 20 to 70, 78. And so some of these students are just seeking continued personal development, just enjoy education and want to continue to learn, while others that are taking advantage of the PLA program and the Masters of Professional Studies, those are individuals that are looking to acquire new skill sets to either enhance their resume and look for promotion or to switch careers. So we have a variety of individuals that are taking advantage of those different programs.
And I know we're almost out of time already, but how can people learn more about this, or how can they, you know, if they're 60 plus, how can they get involved with some of this?
I am happy to share with people that we have a website for the Positive Aging Consortium, which is really the lead group within the university for the age-friendly university. We are mtsu.edu/PAC, which stands for Positive Aging Consortium. So mtsu.edu/PAC. And I'm really happy to announce also something new that's just happened, is that we have announced that April 17th next year of 2026, we will be holding our third Positive Aging Conference at the Miller Education Center. So we've had two really successful conferences. Those are for older adults to really give you ideas and opportunities to enhance your own living. So we hope that lots of folks will turn out for that.
Dr. Deborah Lee and Dr. Brandon Grubbs in studio with us this morning from MTSU. We appreciate you guys joining us.
Thank you so much.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting your family to come do business with my family. You can find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street here in Murfreesboro. Whether your pup prefers to play indoors or outdoors, we have the toy for them here at Animal City. And while you're shopping local at Animal City, be sure to check out our featured products made right here in the USA. We are very proud to be family-owned and serving Murfreesboro since 1990. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Rutherford County's 24th annual Earth Day celebration is Saturday, April 26th, 10 to 2 on the Murfreesboro Square. Middle Tennessee Electric is proud to be the primary sponsor and organizer. Free fun for the whole family, April 26th on the Square. RCEarthDay.com for more info.
Do you love to read?
Love to read.
Tell us about the library at Adams Place.
We have an amazing library. It's like a library at a big estate. You know, there are just so many books. You just come, pick out one you want, take it home, read it, take it back. It's just great.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Now joining us in studio, we have Dr. Kim Cleary Sadler, Professor of Biology Education. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. So flowers and much more. Tell us a little bit about what is coming up with the Wildflower Festival.
So we have, this is a partnership that the Center for Cedar Glade Studies at MTSU has with Cedars of Lebanon State Park. And more recently, Longhunter State Park, where this weekend we celebrate the wildflowers of Cedar Glades. And Cedar Glades are a really unique and interesting ecosystem that we have here in Middle Tennessee that very few people know about that have lived there their entire lives. And they're characterized by these flat rocks, outcroppings, and varying soil depths. But this time of year in particular, it's just a flower garden. It's just beautiful jewels.
Now, if you would pull that mic down a little bit further.
You bet.
But this has been going on for the celebration almost 50 years now, right?
That is correct. So this started out as a companion to There Is a Wildflower Pilgrimage in the Smokies. So Cedars of Lebanon said, hey, let's do one here with these beautiful jewels that we have here in the Cedar Glades. And so that's what initiated that. We are in the 47th year. And in 2008, we renamed the festival after a professor at Vanderbilt, Dr. Elsie Quarterman. And she launched that naming and was with us until she turned 104, and amazing.
You know, Tennessee is a much more biodiverse state, I think, than people really realize. And the variety of plants that we have here is pretty remarkable.
It really is. And it's exciting to see. We have a lot of people moving here from different parts of the country that have, you know, grown up around a very different type of vegetation. And it's really, the center's excited to share with everybody these different beautiful rare plants that we have. There's just really more than 25 different species that are unique, that are endemic to Cedar Glades. And people may have them in their backyard and they don't know about them, and they don't know really to protect them or how to do that.
Now, this festival, it covers not only Cedars of Lebanon, but then also Longhunter State Park. And if anybody would like to get some more information on it, how can they do that?
So there's actually three ways that you can do that. You can you can go to the MTSU website, which is, should I say that, Scott?
Sure.
Just go ahead and give it out. So it's www.mtsu.edu and then /Glade, GLADE-Center, CENTER, www.mtsu/Glade-Center. Or you can go to the events page for Cedars of Lebanon and or Longhunter State Park as well.
Now, one of the, I think, kind of fascinating things about Tennessee is all the limestone, and the limestone Cedar Glades is especially interesting just because you've got not only plants, but trees growing in almost no soil whatsoever. I mean, they're literally growing on tops of rocks.
Exactly. And it's a little bit misleading because the limestone it's easily dissolved by rainwater and it forms cracks. And once those cracks develop, let's say, really the story of Cedar Glades is not about the cedars, which are actually junipers, but it's about the opening, the glady open spot. But at any rate, back to the cedars, that crack will form, and then the cedar will go ahead and begin germinating there. And as it grows, the crack gets larger, the taproot grows longer, et cetera, et cetera. And then the tree establishes itself.
It's wild how life adapts to the area, the environment that it's in.
It's so incredible. And really the thing that we have learned is that the story of the glades, again, it's about the open spot. And really to maintain glades, you need to maintain that opening. And what did it historically was actually fire. And we, you know, again, we have to use a lot of caution in that. But the way that these open areas are maintained would be through currently controlled burns.
Again, Kim Sadler with us this morning, professor of biology education at MTSU. I'm curious, with students today, how interested are they in things like plants and flowers and everything?
Oh, that's such a great question. And again, you know, you can't protect what you don't know and what you don't care about. And I'm finding that the students are fascinated. And I have a class that I teach in the fall where we go out and we do research on the soil of the Cedar Glade. And a lot of people want to call soil dirt, but really it's not. It's a vital living ecosystem all unto itself. And they're just fascinated to learn about the relationship of the soil to the kinds of plants that live there. And we know there's some connection because these plants, these endemic plants, we don't find them, for example, in the Smoky Mountains. They're not there. They're here in this unique ecosystem. Like you said, lots of sun And in the winter, they're in standing water, and they have wonderful adaptations that allow that to be so.
Are we still learning more about plants today, and are we able to tie those plants to the medical field as well?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And, you know, when you introduce people to Cedar Glades, they're like, well, what, you know, what good is this? And the thing is that 1/4 of medications today are from medicinal plants. And we learn about the plant, and then we understand the biochemistry. And so why would we want to protect these? It's because we probably won't know what we lost if we don't protect it in the first place.
But it is fascinating how scientists, it does seem like there is so much more to learn out there that we just have barely reached hardly any level at all yet.
That is so true. It really is. And really the secret, of course, is not taking these plants and trying to grow them in a greenhouse, but trying to maintain them in the habitat in which it is that they live. And the thing that's so, I guess, redeeming about Cedar Glades, even though a high percentage of them are lost, is that they're not very conducive to growing corn on or building houses because of, you know, the rocky infrastructure. Soils don't perk.
Do you take a group of students or do you ask the students to go to these events?
I actually am not. This year is a little bit unique in that I'm not bringing students with me, but this is an open invitation. We would be thrilled to have anybody and everybody come and learn a little bit. We've got a full agenda. We start with an evening program where we have one of the botanists 40 years ago that was key to the legislation of the Tennessee Rare Plants Act. And that's Paul Summers. And then the state botanist, Todd Crabtree, MTSU grad. He will also be speaking that evening and, you know, just sharing some wonderful things about the rare plants in Tennessee.
A lot of rare plants in Tennessee?
We do. We actually do. And really, you know, 5 miles from where we're sitting, we have Pine's ground plum, which wasn't even known, really new to science until the late 80s, discovered by, at the time, Milo Guthrie. That was kind of a trade name he used, but Milo Pine. And it's a wonderful, wonderful plant. We also have the poster child of conservation, the Tennessee coneflower, which occurs at Longhunter. So let me say this, these plants, there's no one glade that has all of the rare plants in it all together. But at Longhunter, you can see the upcoming Tennessee coneflower, which was actually on the cover of our phone book for a while. And the thing that's wonderful about this plant is, you know, it's not all bad, Dad. We learned about this plant. We learned how it grows, where it grows, and why it does. How does it set seed? And once we figured that out, we were able to take this plant and put it in protected areas. And so it's a conservation success story. So it went from federally endangered to now it's on the threatened species list. Isn't that cool?
That is. And again, for those listening, the L.C. Quarterman Cedar Glade Wildflower Festival, that's going to be May 2nd through the 3rd at Cedars of Lebanon State Park, and then May 4th at Longhunter State Park. And there are going to be things like bird watching, nature hikes, gardening workshops, and more. But there's going to be a lot going on there.
There's going to be a whole lot going on. And if you're interested, particularly if you've just moved here to Middle Tennessee, in the morning at 9 o'clock, there will be a there'll be somebody actually showing you the native plants that you can grow in your yard. And again, you know, the box stores have all these plants that we buy year after year. They live and they die. But if you're going to really make a good investment in your landscaping, hey, why not plant native plants that will, even if they're annuals, they'll reseed and they'll come back year after year. And the perennials, the native perennials, they'll do the same.
Now, most of the events that are going on, they're going to be free, right?
That is correct. Most of them are free, and we're asking you to register through the Cedars of Lebanon events page and through Longhunter. You'll be asked for a donation, but there is no pressure to do that. You know, there those that have no charge, you know, just say zero and go ahead and sign yourself up. Some of them do have a small fee to cover materials.
Now, I know over the past 12 months or so, there's been new legislation come out. There's been special bills, I guess, kind of marking certain areas, I think two in Rutherford County, in fact. But there's the rare plants, the rare plant legislation. Tell us a little bit more about that one.
So it was, you know, again, as our botanist and individuals who worked in this area began to notice, you know, we have this unique Middle Tennessee were basically a thumbprint depression in the state, which brought us all the way down to this limestone rock, began noticing that we have rare plants here, and again, we have rare plants in other places of Tennessee. And again, as development proceeds, which is, of course, a natural, you know, a natural course of things, it was deemed that, you know, hey, we can't keep these plants alive in the greenhouse. We have to protect the habitat in which it is that they live. And so that brought forth the legislation for the protection of these rare plants in Tennessee.
Interesting. And again, if anybody would like to learn more about these activities, that Elsie Quarterman Cedar Glade Wildflower Festival is going to be May 2nd through the 3rd, and then that's at Cedars, Lebanon, then May 4th at Longhunter State Park. But all of these events are right around the corner, and pre-register for some of them, right?
Right, that's right. And just so we can, you know, keep up with the numbers of people as well, and maybe just a little bit of a pitch, we're also selling a little booklet that the MTSU Center for Cedar Glade Studies and the Tennessee Native Plant Society, we just published. It's called Limestone Cedar Glades, an Introduction to Some Common and Rare Species. So it's a booklet that has more than 100 species of plants that you'll find in Cedar Glades. And it's not marketed yet, but it will be available for just for a small fee to cover the printing cost at the festival.
That sounds great. Again, with us in studio, Dr. Kim Clary Sadler, Professor of Biology Education at MTSU, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
The Elsie Quarterman Cedar Glade Wildflower Festival. It'll take place May 2nd through the 4th at Cedars of Lebanon State Park and Longhunter State Park, and it's an outdoor event that celebrates rare plants and flowers.